Friend Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this November the 30th on the West Coast, and now December the 1st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Isn't that interesting? We can be on two totally different dates and still be in the same country. Well, it happens in many other places around the world. We'd also like to welcome some people that are in other time zones on Wind Talkers Radio Network, as well as on blogtalkradio.com on the internet. I had a chance to speak to many people around the world today on Drew Raines, a Marine's Disquisition, and I got to talk about a piece. This is another research piece, investigative piece, that came my way via a newspaper article from 1952 that was in the personal possessions of a judge. And this judge passed away recently and left these mementos to his grandchildren, actually. And the grandchildren discovered this article. The article was called Ike Gets Birth Certificate, Filed in Courthouse Here, referring to Grayson County, Texas, and I was amazed at what this article talked about because I said, we have another long-legged Mac Daddy scandal that occurred in 1952 in the state of Texas. Isn't this interesting? And I did some quick research, and I'm sure you're going to want to read the article. Go to directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and you will see Eisenhower 1952 Birth Certificate Fraud Revealed. I found Mr. Eisenhower in 1924 made another declaration to INS officials at Ellis Island stating that he was born in Tyler, Texas, and not in Denison, Texas. Now, certainly the person who was born would know where they were born, or were both lies. And I suspect, on the basis of all the things I've discovered, that Eisenhower himself likely wasn't a true American. Certainly not born in Texas, certainly not born in the land of Oz, otherwise known as Kansas. We have almost mirrored the same story in this Barack Obama, or B.O., as tonight's guest likes to call him. Who is tonight's guest? Well, he is a talk show host in his own right. He has a show on republicbroadcasting.org, as well as on the Rents Radio Network. He's heard around the world. He's known for his specialty as a naturopath and many other issues. He's an excellent researcher, excellent author, and journalist. What else does he do? My goodness. Well, we'll find out tonight. Anyway, he's back for more. We welcome back my good friend, Dr. A. Drew Ott. Drew, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks again, Don. It's a pleasure to be on the show, and you always come up with some amazing fun things. Wow, you know.
This is a Sunday morning. I mean, I spent Sunday doing this, and I came up with quite a bit of research. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
Well, I know. I can't imagine Eisenhower being anything but, a good native-born Texan, but I tell you, strange things. Could it have been just a clerical error, or was it?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm finding that the stories and the what do you call them? These log cabin tales are not chronologically working out. Not whatsoever. We have the East Texas Historical Society, which I referenced an article by a PhD. Who's the director of that society, he's saying that Eisenhower left 6 months after he was born. The family moved back to Kansas. So you're telling me for 6 months, a man that cannot find make his way in farming, meaning David Jacob Eisenhower, his father, goes to Texas to scrub locomotives for 6 months, has a baby, and moves back to Kansas to now work at a dairy. It's implausible what occurred and what this article describes. Absolutely impossible that a private in the Army takes it upon himself to rally the flag and get a birth certificate for the supreme Allied commander and the commander of NATO, first commander. It's implausible that this would have occurred.
Huh. And, he was born in America, surely, wasn't he?
Well, if he was born in Denison, Texas, there was no record of it, and he declared he was born in Tyler, Texas, on September 27th, 1924.
Huh.
So substantially before 1952, he had already made a declaration he was born in another city. To me, they're both lies. You see, we don't have a birth certificate from either town.
Huh.
Okay? And certainly you wouldn't make up a story about where you were from unless you weren't from someplace.
Yeah. It's simple. Wonder where he was from. Wonder where he was born.
Well, I suspect Germany. I suspect there's a Rothschild connection to the family. And certainly there became a Rockefeller connection when he was the president of Columbia University. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he was. I thought he was a career military man.
Oh, but he was also for 5 or 6 years the president of Columbia University. And what's interesting is they say he was born in Kansas. Okay, so we have three birthplaces for one man. Now, that matches Barack Obama, okay? But I think we pretty much nailed where he was born, so.
Yeah.
No, this is a pattern, and the only point I'm bringing this up is we found the cookie-cutter method, okay? We know that Eisenhower used it, and they used the same method that Eisenhower used. This was done by the mail, if you can imagine this.
Wow.
Or the story's a total fabrication, but published in a newspaper, nonetheless.
Huh.
Certainly debunked the newspaper article if I didn't debunk anything else.
Well, I was able to, I took the vacation last week, as you know, Don, and there on the cruise ship, I just basically caught up on my reading and finished up the novel, or the book, actually, historical book, a true novel on General Patton's assassination, which was a very interesting read. The reasons behind General George Patton's murder. He was absolutely taken out, and he had some major problems and intelligence he had gotten on Eisenhower. So,
isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, I mean, I just that's why I think it's funny that you came up with that. There was a lot of information in the book that Stalin and Eisenhower kind of collaborated and covered up his murder.
Hmm.
But
now, you know, there are numerous accounts of Eisenhower having ordered the execution of thousands of German soldiers as well.
That's what book was going into that, and Patton was basically in the same role as MacArthur was in the Pacific. And according to this book, you know, this is his own writings, his own memoirs, his own letters to his wife. He was uncovering a lot of very shady things going on with the OSS, which became, of course, the CIA. And as I was reading this book, I thought, well, maybe Eisenhower just didn't know what was going on. Maybe he just was kept out of the loop. But then it's interesting, knowing his connections, as you just said, with Columbia University and whatnot, he had to know. He had to know.
Well, yeah, and it certainly puts a very, very strong link between him and the Rockefellers.
Mm-hmm.
Being the president of that university, what would he offer as a general in the U.S. Army or as a commanding general. And I'm not belittling commanding generals. There have been some who have been quite brilliant. But, you know, in West Point, he only graduated in the top 50% of his class. When they say in the top 50%, it sounds like he was at the 50% line. Okay. You know, you would say the top 60% or the top 70%. So, you know, so he was average. What was it about him? It would have had to have been something in his bloodline. And I suspect that he had a connection to the Rothschilds. I really do.
Wow.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm just thinking about that book on the Patton and how it was, a lot of things were coming out about the feud going on between him and Ike, and it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that came out in the movie about Patton as well. Now, I don't know how accurate it is in comparison to the book you're reading, certainly he was getting the short end of the stick in a lot of ways, and the publicity was always intended to make the character look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Despite, you know, he, in my estimation, was a true hero.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the papers and the memoirs that are published in this book show just how, you know, how great he really was, and how he was upset that the propaganda coming out of post-war Germany concerning the Jews was just making him livid. He said it's, you know, the letters and then the proof he established was this, this really wasn't that big of a Holocaust against the Jews per se, but there were more Russian and Gypsy, you know, type of individuals in those slave labor camps, and the way in which the German prisoners were treated was far beyond rationality, according to his memoirs. And he was not happy with Eisenhower and the slant that the Bolsheviks were putting to elevate, you know, this Holocaust and the killing of all these millions of Jews. Not to say that there weren't a lot of Jews killed, and don't get me wrong, but, you know, 100 or 50,000 is still an absolute disaster, but it's not anywhere near 6 million.
Well, there was an Armenian genocide of some 22 million people.
Right.
That should be getting almost four times the attention of a Jewish Holocaust. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, so you got the connection there to Wall Street, Bolsheviks, the Schiff family, and of course the Rockefeller Rothschild connection, which Eisenhower was at the very least turning a blind eye to the propaganda, and Patton was very livid over it and was making a lot of very loud waves over it. Okay, so he had to be silenced according to the book, and he was in fact murdered.
Yes,
he was put in harm's way with this. There was a planned wreck. The truck that hit him didn't kill him outright, but he was taken care of in the hospital. So, yeah.
Now, while you were gone, I wrote an expose on Fort Hood. Or I think you may have still been around.
Uh-huh.
That is the real pandemic, that article.
Right.
It's caught a virus of its own, and it's been all over the world. It's on thousands and thousands of websites, and people are really paying attention. And the reason I bring that up is yesterday I had planned on working on my website, my archives, and things like that, so I can get a lot of my backlog shows up on the site for people to listen to. Some of them are interviews with you, in fact, that I consider to be very important and very pertinent to what's going on today. And this email came in with this article, and I know the person that sent the article, and this person is related to the judge that actually was, I think, forced to sign this certificate legitimizing Eisenhower as a citizen of Texas, as a native of Texas. And it just didn't make sense that this would occur in the manner in which it was described. Anyway, I sat back and I thought, okay, should I write something about this? I'm going to have to do some research. Within 5 minutes, I found the smoking cannon, I called it. And it was a statement that Eisenhower made in 1924. Now, I thought to myself, isn't it amazing how now we don't even have to go out and look for the truth? It comes to us. And I used a statement similar to that in the very opening of the article. I said, it seems that in 2009, we do not have to go far in finding the truth. The truth has its own way of finding us. And that seems to be happening with ever-increasing frequency. Are you noticing that, or is it just me?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And tomorrow, my guest on the radio show will be Dr. Dean Bonley from Calgary, Alberta. And we talked quite a bit today, Don, about what's really going on with this global warming scandal, okay, and the hoax. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting revelations. We're going to talk about the true cause of why the polar ice is indeed melting. It's nothing to do with the ambient temperature. The world temperature is actually in a cooling mode. But what's causing this the polar ice caps to shrivel is a phenomenon that's related to the coming polar shift, the pole shift that occurs about every 3,700 years. Is due, and he explains what's going on. This has been mapped and shown since the early 1900s. There's certain areas in the northern Pacific and in the southern Atlantic oceans that are registering magnetic anomalies where the compasses are basically just swirling. And what's happening when there's a magnetic anomaly, the ozone layer, of course, is ragged and very much full of holes like Swiss cheese, causing the ultraviolet light to come and warm up and heat up that part of the ocean. And those currents that are moving into the ice caps. And he's got this all documented. We're going to be authoring a paper on it, and I'll tell you what, that's going to blow some holes in this inconvenient truth theory.
Are you going to think Al Gore is going to have to give his prize money back on this one? Or?
Well, Dr. Bonley is he's a researcher, works as a consultant for NASA. His credentials are very impeccable. And I asked him why he didn't come out with this much earlier, and he says, "Well, I've got my reasons for timing this." He said, I like to see the green movement in as far as automobiles and that." He says, "That's all important to cut down emissions, et cetera, et cetera." So I'm glad to see some of these changes occur. But make no mistake, like we talked about today with my guests, this is a complete and total smokescreen for the emergence of the one world government, giving them police powers and basically taking and robbing the rich nations of the world and absconding with the true wealth of the natural resources.
Yeah, under the guise of spreading it around to everyone. Of course, there's never been any accountability for anything like the Federal Reserve or the Treasury and what lies or doesn't lie in Fort Knox and it's just one scandal after another. It doesn't end.
That's right. So it's a matter of just being able to prove the science, to show the actual documentation. Why NASA's been silent about this is quite amazing as well. Because there are some problems facing the Earth, but these polar shifts have happened and have been recorded through the geological record. They happen quite regularly, you know, almost on a specific timetable. And Dr. Bonnelly maps out that we are probably due, because of the Earth changes that are happening right now, to a major polar shift sometime in the near future, maybe a century or so. But when that happens, you'll see the regions of Canada, such as the midsection of Alberta, being basically turned into, again, a state of almost an equatorial climate. And then, you know, having every other climate respond as well in the different continents.
Yeah, so, I've heard that Saudi Arabia, for example, may turn into something of a more moderate, may possibly even northerly type of climate, you know, like is known on the North Pole right now.
Right, if you look at the geological history, that's the way it was about 3,700 years ago, and it just alternates between these shifts. So yeah, it's an amazing science. It's not talked about too much, but polar shifts are indeed a reality, and it appears like we're heading towards that.
Yeah. Now, when this information comes out, and of course, I'm not buying most or all of it. You know my thoughts on the Mayans, for example.
Uh-huh.
This whole idea that the Mayan calendar is going to or has prophesied that 2012 is going to be this calamity, this catastrophic event that no one is willing to discuss. And yet they want us to, the powers that be want us to be in fear, of course. So they put out these stories that the Anunnaki are returning, that Planet X is coming, that this polar shift is going to be a disaster that's going to put the Earth off of its axis, and we're going to have 300-mile-an-hour winds. And, you know, we've heard all this stuff over and over, and it's not come to pass in the timeline that those that came forward with the predictions predicted. you know, what is he saying in terms of you know, these prophecies and that? And
oh, it's not related to the prophecies, but there is something to do again with the magnetic structure of the Earth itself. It's like a rotating top; it flips. And he can explain it much better. He's done the research in science, and he'll be my guest tomorrow on the show. As far as Planet X and all this stuff with the Mayans, he doesn't buy into that at all.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, the Mayans did know a lot, and they were very conscious people. There's no doubt about that. I think NASA's problem, which you sort of alluded to, is that there's a lot more going on than they're willing to disclose to the general public.
Right.
There's been speculation, and the rumors are flying that there's going to be some formal kind of announcement from the long-legged Mac Daddy that we're being visited, or that we have been visited, or we are already inhabited the inner Earth by beings from another place. And, you know, we'll hear the Rodney King style rah-rah speech, "Can we all get along?" You know.
Right.
Really, we've taken the thunder away from that a number of times on this show and on other shows. We've talked about this issue without being embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you take some flack from certain people that are still living inside the Matrix that just want to say, well, that discredits everything. Well, no, it doesn't. What we know is part of our experience is not nullified by another's denial or their lack of experience.
Well, you know, I do. I'm not ashamed to declare that I do believe that there is the hollow earth theory is fact. I mean, there's been so many anomalies happen, okay? You've got eyewitness accounts. You've got the testimony of Norwegians who actually have entered into that the opening in the poll area. It's such a humid constant heat, okay, and whenever you have warm, moist air coming up and meeting with frigid cold air, what do you get, Don?
Well, you get fog, or you get, you know, mist or steam.
You get a dang thick fog, and
and
that's as you look at the polar region. Of course, Antarctica is a landmass that's covering that. There's certain areas that are constantly over the ice, mm-hmm. or iced over completely. But on the north slope, the North Pole, that area is completely a fog-bound mist area. And yeah, people fly over it all the time, and pilots will, you know, they don't really go completely over true North Pole. But as you look down, it's hard to differentiate between snow and ice and cloud fog cover, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The expedition of Admiral Byrd is an amazing story. Admiral Richard Byrd's expedition, and how he actually took an airplane from his base camp and flew, followed the contour of the land and followed instruments into the fog bank, and then came into this tropical paradise and was just amazed at what he saw with the land, the water, even the flew around and witnessed a woolly mammoth feeding. And all this sounds very wild until you realize he wasn't alone. He had a wingman with him, a co-pilot, and the co-pilot was a young man at that time who, believe it or not, is still alive. And I have talked with this guy, this gentleman. He's very... I want to get him on a radio show, but... You know, he's in his late 80s. I think he's probably turned 90 now, and he just doesn't want the publicity. He's very gun shy about it. But whenever I talk to him about the story written from, you know, basically the published excerpts from Byrd's diary, he said, "Absolutely, that is absolutely true. It happened." So the question then becomes, Don, why are they keeping this such a great secret? You know, why is this not being exposed, and why is it a matter of national security, international security, okay? All major questions, important questions. I think that there is an advanced civilization inside of this Earth. I really do, and I think that many of the so-called UFO phenomenon is crap from inner Earth, not so much from outer space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's both, actually.
Yeah.
From my experience, I would say there's a lot more traffic out in the outer space than there is coming from underground bases and the inner Earth. But I don't dispute what you're saying whatsoever. In fact, I know that the Federation runs into interference and encounters these individuals on a regular basis. Whether or not the long-legged Mac Daddy makes the announcement, I'm making it.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know, Art Bell talked about it for years. George Norrie has talked about it for years. Stanton Friedman, although Stanton Friedman for a long time was very anti all of this stuff. You know, he didn't even... At least he professed that he didn't think there was an MJ-12. Well, they prefer to call themselves Majestic now or Magic. And, you know, it's a larger group. It's larger than 12 people. And there are a lot of things going on. We can't ignore the fact that they're going on. And because they're going on and we're not supposed to know them or see that they're going on, does not deny us the opportunity to talk about it.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You know, to pretend that it doesn't, that extraterrestrial life doesn't exist is extremely myopic, extremely egotistical and short-sighted, in my opinion, because, you know, the vastness of space is so incredible, and the potential, the mathematical potential for other civilizations to be so much more advanced and technologically superior is beyond question in my mind. And again, it goes back to the question of where did life originate on this planet. You have two schools of thought, of course. Well, we were either part of an evolutionary movement from the chimps to the humans, which is bogus, of course. Or we find, you know, that civilizations, the Sumerians, the Egyptians, these civilizations did not evolve. They came in full technological glory, just came, all right? The truth is that we have been devolving from technology. We're now rediscovering things that I believe these ancient civilizations had perfected long, long ago, including the computer, including internet, including all kinds of space exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you brought up a very good point. You're saying we're devolving, and that's obvious. It's dangerous as much of the technology is, especially, you know, microwave technology and the things that we come into close proximity with when we're using it, whether it's a cell phone or a computer screen, certain types of video monitors, certain types of radios, two-way radios, for example, or satellites, satellite dishes, I should say, and all the different uses that those have, not to mention microwave ovens. I mean, if we're not bombarding the body from the outside, we're bombarding it from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Those that are using those devices as, cooking methods and that. If the stuff is being modified, you know, at a high rate of frequency, and it's cooking even after the oven goes off, what happens when it goes in your body? It's got to be killing cells or creating the foundation for disease.
Right.
We look at these technologies because they created bells and whistles and lights and pictures and sounds that to go with them. They're nothing but expensive baby rattles, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what captivated the attention of a baby, was something that made noise, something they could hold and shake in their hand. And the rattle's been replaced by the cell phone. But it's become much more dangerous than the rattle. You know, in the
right.
early days, it was if the rattle breaks and the beads are swallowed, or, you know, if the baby tries to bite it and actually breaks it and breaks the skin, you know, or swallows a piece of a shard of plastic. We've gone so far beyond reality, and I say in the wrong direction, that many people are really locked into and addicted to all of these things, too. You see it on the highways. You see it in church, if you go to an organized church. Somebody would be sitting there right in the front pew during the middle of a sermon and talking on the cell phone. You know, people just can't get away from it. And I see people in lots of situations where they just have to reach into their pocket and pull the cell phone and go through a bunch of numbers and look to see who text messaged them, or they've got to send a message to somebody. It's become almost like part of their DNA, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
They've connected with it, and it's really the result of a much lower vibration, a much lower form of consciousness, because the technology does all the work.
Yep, I agree. I just I would just like to pay a visit on the inner earth and visit with the civilizations that are there. If you look at when you have a land mass and this planet is constantly rotating, you know, you take a model, you take it with the Hubble telescope and take a look at our neighboring planets. Saturn's a classic example with the rings. You can see clearly the polar openings there. Anything that's basically as a spinning inertia is going to have a hollow core. And to have the eternal sun, you know, that burns inside that core, makes all the sense in the world to me scientifically. Okay, there's an incredible book written by this Norwegian fisherman and his son, who set sail and came through the iceberg flow and sailed right into the inner Earth, and they're told all about what they experienced there, and they actually circumnavigated the interior and came out on the southern end. Okay, an amazing story of their adventures and what they went through. Unfortunately, when they began to talk about their experiences, it's right around the early 1900s. They were locked away as lunatics. Yet you have things going on all the time in the North Slope of Alaska. Talking to a few people I know that worked the oil fields there, would tell about the coldest it was when the southwesterly wind would blow off the Aleutians, coming in, it would just be totally bitter cold. But when the north wind would blow, it would be mild and warm and nice coming from the north. There was pictures that I saw about a huge piece of driftwood that came into the North Slope of Alaska and had washed up on the shore, and that is a common occurrence. Here's all of the North Slope, the muskeg, the mossy tundra, no trees in sight on that barren North Slope. And here you have these massive driftwood trees washing up. One in particular was about the size of our giant redwoods. Okay, the tree was pretty much hollow. The natives would watch for these pieces of large driftwood, and they would make short work of them. And they would cut them and carve them up for their totems and use them, of course, for their firewood. This one instance, they actually cut into this large log, and darned if there wasn't a frog, a large frog inside that was massive frog. It measured a good 8 to 9 feet across. Imagine that. The frog was not dead, but it was very cold and sluggish, and those frog legs would feed the village.
I'm thinking, who needs a guard dog? Get a frog.
big frog. But as you look and step outside the box and you realize just how much we, the people of this world, have been lied to. You bring up the subject of Atlantis or Lemuria, Don, and the mainstream professors and the college folks will just look at you like you're a new age wacko. But yet, I've been down in Florida in the Keys and seen some of the breakwaters. They build the breakwater down there on the southern peninsula. They went out and just basically broke up some of the rock offshore. And these are temple blocks. These are carved pillars, for heaven's sakes. We're meant to believe this is just a natural thing underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things that science knows. I also read the latest book by Dan Brown last week, finished it off. I kind of put my reading more than anything else on this cruise. But you know, Dan Brown's a lost symbol, and it was funny how many people on the cruise were reading the same book. I saw at least a dozen people, you know, reading this bestseller. But what's amazing is the incredible hidden documents and artifacts that have been tucked away in the Smithsonian Institute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, heavens! person could spend years and not see everything in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
Dan Brown did a lot of important research, and while the book is fictional, of course, the research he's done is not fiction about the architecture, about the symbolisms of Washington, D.C. But I really take exception with what he said about the Masons being just a benign, wonderful brotherhood. Obviously, he hasn't read deeply into Albert Pike's writings, where he declares the architect of the universe and the beast of the east is Lucifer, son of the morning. He can't coexist with Jesus. One of them has to be right, one of them has to be wrong. So anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. People, you know, we walk around thinking everything is normal in our lives, and the reality of the world is so much different than what we're led to believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what I find interesting, if I can make a couple of comments here, because, and you know, you're talking about these openings at the poles, and I was thinking of the Aurora Borealis.
There you go.
Jim Murray and I had a conversation about this. In fact, those phenomena probably occur because of the energy grids that hold the Earth in its orbit and all other planets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole universe is filled with these grids, and we're constantly fed energy that's emanating from the center of the universe, if you will, and causing things to move. If they stop moving, if they stop changing, they cease to exist. That's a fundamental universal law. And so, you know, there's no political candidate that can bring about any kind of change as great as what's occurring naturally in the universe. In regard to these tropical areas in the midst of what appear to be Arctic areas, these phenomena can come about for a variety of reasons. Let's say an energy portal or a dimensional portal where heat is allowed to manifest because of a focus or concentration of these higher energies, creating a totally different habitat for the area. Tibet had been written about by T. Lobsang Rampa, who is basically that's his alias for writing. And it was to protect him. But the monks in Tibet predicted that there would be an invasion by the Chinese. It had been predicted for thousands of years, and it came about exactly when they said it was going to happen. This knowledge doesn't come from a monkey, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are areas which are power centers known for certain levels of consciousness, especially where the people devoted their lives to continuously developing the consciousness. But you have to also consider that they may have come from a higher place of consciousness to begin with, and maybe are just here to ground us or to lift us up in our frequency. Now, regarding Bird, I understand from a series of stories that I've been doing on this very topic of hidden technologies and hidden secrets of our past, especially the archaeological finds. Jim and I have been for the past 2 months or so doing a series of shows every Friday night where we're going through pyramidology and the El Dorado gold, you know, the seven cities, secret seven cities of where this gold is supposedly buried. Mm-hmm. Of course, no one's found it. No one's been able to pinpoint these areas because when you go to when you follow a lead to a certain location, they send you off in another direction. So
right.
It's always the same story. But again, when Bird went to South America, and he was supposed to go on a 6-month expedition and had a military escort, and they came back in 6 weeks, and sort of with a shocked look on everyone's face, if you know what I mean. And they had also speculated that there was such a place there in the Antarctic, similar to what you're describing up near the North Pole.
Exactly. Yeah, there is. And there's it's a very narrow opening, according to Johannes, you know, the Norwegian. When it came out on the southern end, it's a very narrow opening through the landmass, the continent, mm-hmm. okay? But he did make it out, but his ship was destroyed. He got hit by an iceberg and destroyed and crushed between two of them, and so they were adrift, and they were picked up by a South American freighter, actually. But what in the world is Norwegians doing at the southern tip of Brazil? They did, in fact, circumnavigate the interior, and there are cultures there, advanced cultures, mm-hmm. they said, which interact with other planets, according to what Bird said as well. They're Nordic, not so nice guys either. Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that same appraisal. So.
Yeah.
We've got a caller on the line. I think. I don't know how long this message has been up on the board here.
Okay.
I think not too long. Ron in Pennsylvania. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Question or comment?
Kind of some comments.
How you doing?
There is a book that was out talking about not the polar shifts itself, but there was an older book which I don't have in front of me. I think it was called The Genesis Strategy. And it had to do with weather changes and climate shifts and so forth. And what is now over in the Middle East desert was lush farmland many, many centuries ago. And this apparently does happen. And they explained the whole thing over there from a scientific standpoint. So it wasn't always sand over there. Those people in biblical times, when they, in the tens and hundreds and thousands, they had to have something to eat. So they did have a lot of farmland over there. It wasn't always that way. So there had to have been some kind of dramatic or catastrophic changes that came about to change those conditions over there.
Yeah, I would say nuclear war would be the likely culprit.
The paper that I wanted to quote from, I don't have in front of me. Now, my printer, I've probably copied 18,000 sheets, so I don't have everything right at my fingertips. But you had mentioned about Eisenhower. A very good friend of mine, whom I'm in touch with almost on a daily basis, was a child in the bombings in World War II in Germany. And right after the war, Eisenhower did intern as many civilians as he can get his hands on in encampments. And his baby brother was born, stillborn, starved. And his aunt and his mother were also interned by Eisenhower, and Eisenhower starved him. His aunt died first, and his mother died later, so that's not fiction. He was there for a while but survived, and then he went on to do other things and eventually came over here. Now, I have the photo I was just looking at. Maybe the reason that Dwight Eisenhower, there's some speculation as to where he was born, is that Obama is partially black, but so is Eisenhower. I have a photo of his mother and father on their wedding date in 1888, and his mother's name was Ida Elizabeth Stover Eisenhower. She was a light-skinned black. You could tell by looking right at her. And if there was any kind of controversy as to what city he was born in, perhaps there was some disguising going on as to his locale, not to bring any kind of light to his lineage. I don't know what your opinion would be on that.
Well, you'd have to, you know, it begs the question, many, many years before he ever probably even speculated he would be the president of the United States, he announced to the INS, and it's in writing, that he was from Tyler, Texas. That's where he was born. Now, that disputes the claim of Denison. That's the whole point I'm making right there. Why lie about where you're from? Now, there were other incidents of his lying. For instance, he, according to a newspaper or a historical article that I have within my article, written by the director of the East Texas Historical Society, they claimed that a girl questioned whether or not he was from Denison, and he said, "I don't know where I'm from," which is a very strange comment to make. I mean, was he being a smart aleck, or was that an honest answer? And if it was an honest answer, then certainly he wasn't born in Tyler. Why did he say Tyler? And he wasn't born in Denison. Why are they saying Denison? Well, that
maybe
probably
he had to hightail it out of town for some reason, or his only parents can answer that one.
Yeah, Denison actually plays a role even with the CIA connections of the Dunham clan in my research. And it ties in to Barack Obama, or B.O.
Well, down in Texas and some of those areas down there, there's a lot of heavy Jewish lineage down there. And I have a huge treatise printed out on some of our so-called presidents and leaders and their family ancestry. And that's what I can't find in front of me. But when your topic came up at the top of the hour, I wasn't prepared with that. And I'm going to dig that up at another time, get into that at some proper moment, because it's very, very, very interesting. Whoever did this research did their homework, apparently. And I'd get a splitting headache from doing all of this. But I don't think our presidents and political leaders were who you think they were.
No, I don't either.
Who you think they were.
Dr. Rott, do you have a comment? Or do you have a question for Dr. Ott, Ron? I should ask you that.
No, I'm going to have to pluck some more things up from my archives, and then perhaps I can get back at another time. I do have some questions, but right at the top of my head, I have none right now. So I just thought I'd drop that on you and see what your opinion was on it.
Okay. Sure. Well, thanks for the call, Ron.
Yeah, okay. Take care.
All right, you too. Any comment on that, Drew?
Oh, yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah. There, that would kind of lend some credence to the book on General Patton, where it declares that General Patton was very much ready to blow the whistle on this big Jewish lie and the cover up again. The establishment of the State of Israel and all of this tying in, of course, to the Bolsheviks and the Jewish connection with the Russians and. Make no mistake about it, Patton was very upset about what was happening and wanted to expose it right now. Again, he was put America first the way it should be, not a global presence, okay?
Yeah, well, I'm certain that Patton was quite aware of how we had been dragged into the war, and although they tend not to emphasize that, but you can't be as gifted as he was as a strategist and not see the whole picture. And he probably spoke out about it. And I'm sure he ticked off those that were pushing for this one world government, because that was the whole purpose of the wars, was to create enough chaos and enough change that they could, under the guise of bringing about the peace, they could go in and create all these edicts that basically took away people's rights. Where are they now? They've got 27 countries in the European Union. It's obvious what their intention was there. And they succeeded with that. But simultaneously, what has fed that has been discovered, and mostly here in the United States, the corruption that we have in the central banks, the Federal Reserve, Goldman Sachs. By the way, Chelsea Clinton just announced her marriage to a broker from Goldman Sachs. That gives Bill Clinton a back door into the money laundering again.
Oh, boy.
Don't think there aren't motives behind these arrangements. But I thought I would throw that out, because these are the sort of of things that have always been going on. These are the things that fueled the wars, and they capitalized on us from the beginning. They created the wars. They murdered millions of people around the earth. And then under the guise of peace, what happens? They say, well, this should end the war now. You know, World War One was called the war to end all wars, except for World War Two and the Korean War and the Vietnam War and on and on and on. And you've got all these wars raging in Africa, being fueled again by the CIA and the Mossad and the international intelligence community, because they're all working for the same people. It's always the same group.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones closely, if they're not the reptilians, they're next in line, you know?
Well, yeah, in fact, I got a call today from a lady in San Diego just about an hour before my show went on, and she wanted to ask me some questions about this Joseph Mosche character, okay? And she told me that she was researching it for a paper that she was working to as a freelance journalist, and was just asking specific questions about the fellow that called me after the radio show that day. And I told her exactly what went on, and she had contacted the Patton Mental Hospital and found that he had just been receiving treatment and, quote, evaluation to prove his ability to stand trial. Yet, you know, and then she talked with his attorney and who's a public defender, and has asked some very pointed questions. And she said, there's just so much of this that does not fit. Does not fit whatsoever, as far as the way they're holding this and putting him in, and he will not be allowed to basically ask, you know, I talk to a journalist of any kind. They're keeping him sequestered. Yet they, as she explained, the reason for his arrest he's being held on a felony threat charge. Okay. Supposedly, he called a 911 dispatcher and made a threat that he was going to attack the White House. Well, she said this should be public record. You know, here we have Tiger Woods' 911 call being put out all over media, you know, talking about that. But yet, Joseph Mosche's call is a hidden secret. It should be public record. And she went on with quite a number of very interesting anomalies with this Mosche case. And so she was asking me what I thought, and then I said, well, here's what I remember him saying. He asked me if I knew about Joyce Riley's Power Hour, the caller that called in, a woman that called in and said they were transporting the bird flu, across the, from New York into California and into Mexico. And I said, yeah, I had in fact heard that. He said, well, that's what I'm talking about. I have the evidence to show where these germs originated from, where the antigens came from. I have the documentation into the trucking company. Now, what she had been able to find out from the public defender is his employment was with a trucking company, this Joseph Mosche. A lot of very weird things happening there, Don.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we know, well, you know, Fort Hood was a false flag event of, mm-hmm. you know, on the order of what happened at Virginia Tech. In fact, it was in the style of Virginia Tech, because you had a Virginia Tech graduate involved. And I'm not saying that necessarily he was the gunman. That's the information they put out. They had to have a patsy. We know that there was gunfire at three different places on the base. And there was automatic weapons fire heard by people that know what automatic weapons fire sounds like, because they've been in battle and facing it. So You know, why is that diversion out there? Well, that was masking a big fraud that was being perpetrated at the airstrip. And so all the shooting was a diversion to draw attention away from a big heist that was going on. And that has pretty much panned out to be very accurate. Not just my findings, but what Drew Raines has brought forth, what Christopher Story in England has brought forth, quite a bit that the NSA has been tampering with his server and his website, knocking it down, you know, to prevent the information from coming out, which is nothing more than confirmation that the story is accurate.
Right. Right.
And the web of corruption that's tied to these events is beyond your wildest imagination. Again, it doesn't matter if I'm investigating a political candidate or Fort Hood or some serial shooter or serial murderer or some swindler in the banking community. It all ties in together. The same people, the same organizations, the same methods. And it speaks volumes of, you know, while we're given these outside things to look at, to ponder, or to be belittled when we do bring them up, they're busy robbing the bank. You know, it's a never ending story with these people. There isn't enough greed. They can't satisfy their greed with anything. There aren't enough things out there to quench that thirst. And yep. And so, you know, all you have is this continuing corruption. All the while that, you know, we have a diversion where they're telling us that, you know, their concern is about bringing peace. They're telling us how wonderful the world is right now, or how wonderful our country is, that employment is just a little bit over 10%, when in reality it's over 30% nationwide. And think of the impact that this has on other countries in the world. Because we can't buy their products. The only products that people can afford are Chinese products, and they don't realize that they're feeding the very people that have you know, injured them in that sense. Taking right. the corporations out of the country and giving the jobs to other people. Intentionally to destroy this country and to destroy it from within by destroying its people and usurping its land, stealing its land. Corruptly. They're not even doing it legitimately. It's corrupt.
Yep, and then, of course, so many people are mind-controlled and hypnotized by the media and other techniques that they just refuse to see it. I just marvel how people can still, you know, try and make ends meet by mom and pop having two and three jobs. To put food on the table, you know. I was just sitting in the post office line today, Don, and the two women in front of me were scraping, you know, piggy banks to buy stamps to mail, and they were all almost in tears, crying they couldn't afford to even mail their Christmas cards. And I'm just thinking, you know, look how much the postage has increased. With the rate of inflation, you know, the now 44 cents for to mail a letter, yet the, you know, that just mirrors so much of what government is doing as far as raising the cost through inflationary cycles. But the sad fact is, it just hit me, people's salaries are not increasing at all. They're actually losing ground. At some point, there's going to have to be a break point.
Yeah, and you know, we've, over the past couple of years on this show, we've talked about these issues from time to time, where we tell people that if you're trying to keep this system alive, you're probably going to fail, number one, because the system is going to fail. Mm-hmm. It can't operate feeding off of itself for very much longer. I think pretty much it's like a shark free feeding frenzy. The sharks have to turn on each other because they've already had their meal.
Yeah, it's like the Ouroboros. They're a cultic symbol. It's a snake eating its own tail. At some point, it's going to have to come to eat its own head. And so the end game is simply, well, just decrease the population to a more manageable 1 billion people. And that's the ultimate agenda, Don. And by golly, it's just the ultimate selfishness, the ultimate selfish agenda.
Well, it's insanity, really. I mean, to think that there's no accountability for their actions is insane in and of itself. You know,
yeah.
And this necessity to lie and obscure the truth, it states or it demonstrates how sad their own state is. You know, that they're that much in fear, that they're that paranoid, that somehow by us having the truth about all these things we're talking about tonight is going to empower us. And I suspect they have reason to fear that because it is empowering us. And there's nothing they can do to stop it.
Well, it's amazing, again, like Dr. Bonley and I will talk about tomorrow, Don. It's an inevitable fact that at some point in time the polar shift will occur again. Dr. Bonley has got it all scientifically graphed out as a times table. You can't pick the hour or the minute or the month or even the year, but it will happen. It's happened numerous times in the Earth's geological history. But yet you don't hear about this at all, do you, in the talk shows? You don't hear about it in college climatology texts or anything. But, you know, these precursors to the polar shift, the birthing pains, are these magnetic anomalies that are growing more and more common and causing these ozone layers to open up and warm certain portions of the ocean. And make no mistake, that is a precursor to the shift. Now imagine what would happen, Don, if the pole, the north, so-called North Pole, is shifted down about 2,000 miles, and you have another, you know, the pole now becomes, someplace in Siberia. Okay, the shift is that dramatic. The opening of, you know, the Earth's hollow opening doesn't change. It just means it's no longer icebound or fogbound. It's wide open now. It becomes clear what's really there. That's going to be an exciting event.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, there will be a tremendous amount of cataclysm, of earthquakes and movement of the Earth's crust when this all happens, and you know, again, it's an occurrence that has happened many, many times. As the caller just mentioned, yes, indeed, the Great Desert in the Middle East was once a fertile crescent, and it will be so again when the shift occurs. It'll be a complete climate of seasonal monsoon rains again, okay? And these other areas will become deserts. So, I mean, it's an amazing times table and a story that has been completely ignored and hidden and obfuscated.
Now, has Dr. Bonley mentioned any studies that he may have done or heard of as far as measuring the Earth's frequency and any changes that might be occurring in that regard?
Oh yes, absolutely. He'll talk about that, the magnetic Gauss fields and which is all related to the Earth's pulse and frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. He will discuss all of his research about what happens with the body when it's when this magnetic field is altered. Amazing things happen in the cellular chemistry of the body, and the mental abilities are dramatically changed as well. So again, what is spirit matter, if not a magnetic form of energy? Okay. What I enjoyed about Dan Brown's book and the Lost Symbol is he exposes the study of the noetic sciences, which is really an amazing reality if you understand the noetic structures of basically showing the power of human consciousness, the power of mind and the power of thought, mm-hmm. absolutely being a living force to be reckoned with. And so, yeah, this is why they, the powers that be, want the people living in ignorance and darkness, because then they have, and only then do they have control and maintain control.
When, if I might expand or expound on what you just said, you're bringing to mind something that I saw on the other side in my second near-death experience. And I was shown the Universal Book of Music is the best way I can describe it. But it describes the creation and everything coming from love and manifesting in its various forms, electromagnetic energy and certain concentrations forming light, and light being the vehicle through which information is carried, but also sound. And I not only understood the differences, but how they integrate with the human soul, how they cause the soul to be able to, and I'm speaking about the higher self, okay, the higher consciousness that's always knocking on our door. You know, the lights are on, but nobody's home,
uh-huh.
in most cases. And I just had this understanding that man was moving to a level of consciousness where we would be in tune with these frequencies. In other words, we would be automatically able to tune into the higher frequencies and just know these things. Now, the difficulty is going to be with coping with it on a mental level, because it's so different from what we've been taught. In fact, we've been lied to so much that realizing these truths is going to be a shock to many people. Those of us who've been studying it for years still may have some issues with it, but by and large, we'll be able to cope because we have always contemplated the possibilities of these things occurring, mostly because we're sensing them. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, absolutely. You know, everything has mass and is based on individual cells. No matter if it's a slab of concrete or a marble pillar or your human body, okay? And again, that goes into this so-called noetic science. Really, it's where science meets religion, and the two, you know, weld together into workable form. I think it's fantastic what Dan Brown exposed in that book. He referenced a few studies that I had read a number of years ago, where they basically had placed terminally ill patients in a sort of a cocoon chamber that measured the weight, and immediately after death measured the changes in weight. And make no mistake, the spirit, the soul, which is the intelligence of man, has mass,
mm-hmm.
has weight. It's been shown and proven scientifically. Again, you don't hear about this in the mainstream media. Why not? It's huge. You see, again, it's knowledge is indeed power, and ignorance is bliss to the power brokers.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hear these things like you only live once, so therefore there's an automatic limit to consciousness, and certainly a denial about a creator and multidimensionality and other realities. You know, they want us just focused on this one reality. It's too late. Many of us are out of the box, you know.
That's That's right. And you know, there's unfortunately people in the alternative media that I think are gatekeepers that you know, want to keep the door shut as well.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep the illusion going, and it's so sad. It's so sad that that has to be the way it is. But you know, we're definitely into some interesting times, Don. And thank God for people like yourself and Drew and again my guest tomorrow. I've known Dr. Bonley for many years, well over a decade and a half, and I've been in his home and his business in Calgary. An absolutely brilliant scientist and researcher and just a good, honest-hearted Christian man. What he's going to tell Brake on my show tomorrow will be stunning, I promise you.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know I'll be listening. We're about out of time. We still have a few moments. I want to count on you coming on the show in December. We haven't had the opportunity to talk because you've been out of town, but I'm sure the listeners would like to hear more about the reality of this pandemic. Maybe we can talk about that for a couple of moments, but can I put you on the spot to keep coming on and visit with us on Mondays?
You bet. That'd be wonderful.
Okay. Consider it done then.
Okay.
And the whole world just heard that. All right.
Very good.
You know, it seems to me that since Tiger Woods had his little auto accident, that all of a sudden the flu pandemic has taken a backseat to yet another distraction. And we've, you know, you and I have worked on a couple of stories, one of which I brought up on Drew's show this afternoon. A lot of people are wondering what we should be doing now, and they say, what can we do? And I wonder if they're including me in the we, and I, you know, very sternly said, I'm doing quite a bit, and I know others who are doing quite a bit. And I listed off many of the things that I've done. Now, they may not seem important because people can't make the connections with what's really going on today. And the history, if it's been a lie, deserves to be brought to the light of the truth. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So these issues come up in conversations, and then, you know, we sort these things out. It's not like we're at each other's throats. But sometimes some of us out there get the feeling that we're preaching to the choir, and there are many well-meaning people out there that are just besides themselves as far as coming up with solutions, and so they look for us to bring the solutions too. I know you well enough, and I know your work well enough that you let the truth in the work, you know, in your writings, in your research, come out. It's up to the individual to read that and study that, you know. But they want us to write it, and then they want us to talk about it. It's almost like they have this. Sort of an apathy and a procrastination about actually getting into the work and you know, diving in there. And I know, you know, you went on vacation, and what did you do? You filled your mind with more information. You know, you raised your consciousness about certain topics. And this is the kind of things that people have to do. I still feel that a lot of people have succumbed to this fear-mongering of the media and the lies they're telling about the importance of getting these vaccinations or the reality of what illnesses people are really coming down with. Where are you with that right now? What information are you gleaning from?
Well, I haven't. I've been trying to get through my 1,200 emails that I've had since I've been gone, but more and more, I'm getting just all kinds of new stories about miscarriages and aborted fetuses, and that's what I've said from the beginning. My gut instinct and verified by my own research shows this intravenous swine flu vaccine to be primarily a population control a way of sterilization by immunization, It surely appears like that is what's happening. More than anything else, that seems to be the central theme. And it's not, you know, it's not a universal abortion type of thing. It seems to be tied to certain genetics again. And not surprising, knowing that much of the funding for these vaccines, this so-called swine flu vaccine, comes from the eugenics laboratories of Boston, Massachusetts, and London, England. So, yeah, I just watched this unfold. I said, well, you know, you have to have the wisdom, I guess, to try and share with people as you can, and just pray that as many people will listen, will look up and be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Before I went on the trip, I had a guest on my show who brought this out to me, and she said, look, you can't worry about those that aren't listening. You just have to glory in the ones that you have saved.
Yes, exactly.
You know, there have been thousands.
I agree with that. You know, there's that part of us, those of us who are researchers or talk show hosts, who feel that they've got a message to share, or, you know, often it's not our message. We're bringing the message from a higher place, and I'm sure you would agree with that. The folks that are listening to us and get it are the ones that are going to heed the message and still do, you know, make their own choices, make their own decisions. It shouldn't be based on a belief system. That's what we're extricating ourselves from. And the intention, at least from my perspective, is, you know, I'm not trying to get people to believe what I'm saying. I'm trying to bring them to a state of knowing and being.
Yeah, right. Believing is, the root word is be lie, right?
Yes.
So just put your belief and prejudice on. It's okay to have a certain moral conviction, and that ties into a strong faith. But, you know, Don, you have to always have an open mind. And I look back at what I thought my belief structure was 25 years ago with what it is now, and I just marvel at how stupid I was. And so, you know, we continue to learn, and we throw away those things that don't fit.
Well, it's not necessarily a state of being stupid or, ignorant. I think it's merely, you know, we make certain choices, and our consciousness is focused in a certain place.
Well, yeah, I mean, as a young babe in arms, I believed Santa Claus was real because Mom and Dad said so. But you know what? As we grow older, we say, that's ridiculous. Throw it away.
Oh, yeah. And I remember the day when I told my parents I knew they didn't exist, or that he didn't exist. And I got, you know, don't let your brothers hear that.
Yeah.
So you see, the conditioning was there, you know. there's certain things that you don't talk about. And I
right.
guess, you know, we never really had our freedom of speech as far as Santa Claus was.
Yeah, Satan's Claus is what
I
call it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I got an email from one of our listeners, John in Massachusetts, who happens to be a fabulous guitar player and a great music composer.
Huh.
He actually set the Song of Moses to music. And he's mentioning that there's a Bulgarian physicist that has announced the presence of ETs walking amongst us. And he's laughing out loud, he says. And then he mentions on a more serious note that Brooks Agnew has an expedition scheduled to go to the inner Earth. Now, I talked to Brooks about this earlier this year, and he had been planning on going in August. I don't know why that didn't occur yet. Who knows? Maybe it was too foggy.
Well, yeah, I'd love to be a tail gunner on that expedition. I really would, but I'm sure there's State Department interference and UN interference on that expedition.
Yeah, there might be. John in Massachusetts suggested that you might be interested in going on another cruise.
So. I'm always willing and eager to do that one, you bet.
Well, it's nice to have you back. I missed you throughout the week, but I got to tell you, Ingrid Castle, who I want to have on the show very soon, Don Harkin's wife, did a great job filling in for you, and she's doing pretty well, all things considered.
Well, she's a professional, you know. She's got more experience in radio hosting than I'll ever have, and so I'm sure she did a great job.
Oh, she's so marvelous on the radio. She sounds just like you're having a conversation at the kitchen table, you know,
exactly.
Without all the clanking of the silverware and dishes.
Yeah, she's wonderful. God bless her.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and any information you want to give out, next time, how about we talk about some health issues?
You bet. Let's do it.
I had Dr. Rashid Buttar on last Wednesday, and it was a very interesting show. He talked about a number of issues. Of course, we discussed at length the case of Desiree Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
And the methods that he used in healing, although he wouldn't go into great detail because he didn't want doctors practicing this,
right.
You know, without the proper training. He said they'll think they know exactly what they're doing and they'll mess it all up. But he seems to really have a fabulous system of cleaning out one system and getting a person back on the right path.
Well, we need to do that. You know, the autism rates now are even, now it's about 1 in 50, I understand. They're updating the figures now. Dr. Bonley, again, as he was talking to me today, he said it's not so much, you know, yeah, there's mercury in these vaccinations, but you have to realize that these Chinese factories that are burning this coal without the proper scrubbers, and you burn coal, coal releases in the gaseous state this mercury, which circles the globe, and here on the eastern slope of the Sierras, and the mountains of the Rockies. Now all these native trout are being tested, and these fish are having these ungodly amounts of mercury. It's coming in the upper atmosphere, falling in the mountains, and in the precipitation, and that's what's causing these spikes in mercury. That's a real concern. You know, the Chinese are just not willing to take the precautions to protect the environment that they should be. It's all about making money and making it rapidly. So,
well, yeah, I don't see much difference between putting it in the air and putting it in one's bloodstream.
Yeah,
you know.
So we've got to be aware of that. Be aware that there's got to be ways to detoxify this mercury levels in these kids.
Yes.
So anyway, that's a great topic.
Yeah. Well, I just want to let you know, Dr. Buttar has had great success in that area. In fact, it sounds to me like he's been putting more effort on autism than anywhere else, and just astounding success.
Well, he needs to. To certify and train some people to help.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, and look forward to this coming month here. We're already in the month of December.
Yes, we are.
And so you'll be on the show every Monday in December. Looking forward to that.
Okay, so very good, Don.
We'll see you on the 7th and the multiples thereof.
Very good. Be safe. God bless you,
right.
John. Thank you.
All right, you too. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. He will be with us next Monday, same time, same place. We'd like to also thank Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for carrying the show either live or in a rebroadcast archive. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the song, Ron from Pennsylvania for calling in, John in Massachusetts for your nice email, and you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.